Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, did Liz Truss really screw your mortgage? Some new research from YouGov suggests that the Tories suffered more in the local elections in areas where more people have a mortgage. Are they blaming Liz Truss? Is it fair to blame Liz Truss? And is there anything that Rishi Sunak can do about it? Before that, as the Lib Dems move a motion of no confidence in the government, we ask, what on earth is the point? And if you like what you hear on the podcast, don't forget you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. Off out tonight, the Arias tonight, when I'll find out who I've lost to for best speech presenter again this year. Will it be Jane and Fee? Will it be Hugo Rifkin? Will it be Jeremy Vine? I'll let you know in the morning. But it's just nice to go out, isn't it? It's nice to go out. Now, back to the day. I mean, I like reading as much as the next person, but have we got too many political books? Right now, it seems like everyone in politics these days is in a book club, but they can't agree who's running the book club. The new SNP leader, John Swinney, thinks he's in charge.
Today is the beginning of a new chapter.
But Keir Starmer thinks he needs to tell everyone how a book works.
There is one clear message, which is, let's turn the page.
Rishi Sunak is impressed at the Labour leader's slow reading.
All I'd say is he ought to spend a bit less time reading that book.
Although it all got a bit awkward when a new member of the book club kept interrupting.
Here's my new book. I'll just get it up. Sorry, I'm getting it up front. There we are.
More on the Westminster Book Club as and when we get it. Now, as we always do on a Tuesday, here is a little teaser of what we're discussing on this week's episode of How to Win an Election with Peter Mandelson, Polly McKenzie and Daniel Finkelstein. I want to talk today about what Rishi Sunak should do now and how do you secure a legacy. When he was asked about his proudest achievement in a radio interview recently, he talked about the England cricket team coming to number 10 and changing toilets for disabled children. Important issues. But in terms of a prime ministerial legacy, should he have a better answer to that question? Is there an opportunity for him to secure some sort of legacy?
Well, he's doing, contributing to his legacy, talking about support for people suffering from mental health in order to get people back into the workforce, which is a huge challenge. We've lost a colossal number of people from our workforce, young, middle-aged and old alike, and we don't have enough people working in our economy. That's what I think he should concentrate on. He should concentrate on doing the sensible, responsible things by the country. And what people, you should take a leaf out of John Major and Ken Clark's book from 1997, when they continued governing in a responsible way right up until the end. If you remember Ken Clark's budget, which we've discussed before, he wasn't going on some sort of ridiculous sort of fiscal extravaganza in order to win votes and bribe people. He decided he would do the right thing right until the end. Now, it didn't win the election for the Conservatives, obviously, but it certainly made people feel better about the Conservatives and certainly the Conservative government for years afterwards. And that's what I think Sunak should do. He should stop listening to his brilliant campaign director, Isaac Levido, with all his sort of punchy Australian experience, and follow his own instincts and do what he thinks as Prime Minister is right for the country.
I think in general that is exactly what he is doing. I mean, not all of it is working out, and some people think, you know, don't agree with certain things. Let's take, for example, this week where Alex Chalke, the Justice Secretary, is taking through legislation on indefinite prosecutions, people who've been in jail indefinitely due to a, you know, something that David Blunkett brought in, which I think everyone agreed in 2012 was, you know, was an understandable but, as it turned out, disastrous criminal measure. And it's a liberal criminal reform that almost nobody notices. And there are lots of things that go on like that all the time in government. Another thing that he's done, obviously, is the smoking legislation, which will, you know, will have importance for years in terms of public health. And he's, after a full start, appointed broadly a very moderate and pretty competent cabinet. These things are no longer enough because the Conservative Party has gone through the point where people are just not listening anymore for understandable reasons. They're no longer enough electorally. It is not true that Isaac Levido is telling Rishi Sunak to have a sort of splashy campaign and that he's jumping up every day with irresponsible proposals. That's just, you know, unfortunately the situation is sort of almost worse than that, right? which is that he's moved on to a strategy which he didn't alight on originally, and which I think required drawing a line with Liz Truss and Boris Johnson in the way that we've discussed before. He's moved on to a strategy that just, I think, is too late and it will not work.
You're just making noises, Paul.
I'm trying to interrupt without interrupting, but, it's challenging with these guys. I think what's missing is actually seriously thinking about what can you embed in terms of policy change that will outlast you. Dan is right that, you know, that lots of sensible things are happening in government. There's a towns fund that's broadly sensible. There's absolutely the changes on indefinite sentences. But if you contrast, I talked about this on Friday, some of what Labour did in terms of the Equality Act, the Child Poverty Act and the Climate Change Act, which were really embedding a legislative framework that would outlast them, and in fact absolutely has proved it almost impossible politically for the Conservatives to unpick, and in fact has been part of what made the Conservatives go mad after the last 14 years. But there's also a lack of courage to reach out to the most difficult, controversial, cross-party agendas. And that's partly because reaching out to the Labour Party to try and secure change on something like, I don't know, social care would be seen as too difficult for the people he most wants to appease and needs to manage, which is the more kind of aggravated right-wing sort of parts of his party. And I would contrast what, again, the Labour government did towards the tail end of its time, which was embedding auto-enrolment for pensions, which they were only able to do because of expert advice, really extensive public consultation, and really extensive cross-party work. And I would suggest that actually auto-enrolment for pensions, which has massively increased the amount of pension saving, including and especially amongst lower income workers, is also part of David Cameron's legacy, because all of those times during 2010 to 15 that he desperately wanted to unpick it in favour of sort of red tape, he was unable to do so because he had made those commitments to Labour as part of a cross-party reform that we would do this. The kind of change that only works if it can last a decade, multiple decades, feels like so much of what the Conservatives have been missing, especially since 2015, is any ambition about that kind of long-lasting reform, which you have to secure on a cross-party basis. Yeah. And it's partly because each of the prime ministers they've had since 2015 has been so focused on not even unpicking the Labour Party's legacy, but the legacy of the previous Conservative prime minister.
And you can listen to the full conversation on how to win an election wherever you're listening to this, but not before we find out what on earth the Lib Dems are playing at, moving a motion of no confidence in the government. Tom Peck, the Times' parliamentary sketchwriter, is here to answer the question. Tom, what's the point?
What is the point? Well, I think they,
you know, in basketball, if you don't have a shot in 24 seconds, the ball gets automatically turned over. I think the Lib Dems think that if they don't call a motion of no confidence in the government once a week, then perhaps they will be cast in some mythical fire or something. I cannot fathom what the point of this is. They know that they won't win it. B, they probably won't even be allowed to bring it, in the sense that it will be vetoed by the government. Only the official leader of the opposition can bring one anyway, and he's not going to do it. I think the point is that it maybe gives them a little bit of attention for a little while. That seems to be why they constantly call these motions of no confidence.
So hang on, have we fallen into their clever trap here, Tom, that by asking the question, what is the point? What we've done is we've created the point by discussing them.
We are forever outfoxed by the genius minds of the Liberal Democrats, yet again.
So in a sign of how seriously even the Lib Dems are taking it, the conversation is being played out on Twitter yesterday with people saying, what was the point? And the former Lib Dem leader, Tim Farron, said, we're all going to go through the eye lobby painted up like the Blue Man Group, apart from Ed Davey, who's going to dress up as a big orange bowling ball and skittle us all down. The journalists will love it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think the Lib Dems are very, very, very into the success of their strange by-election morning or election morning straight-to-camera little stunts, aren't they? Like the egg the timer stunts, and the cuckoo clock and blah, 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 blah. And I suspect Tim Farron is addressing there the extremely small niche of people who are aware of this, who think it's a thing. And if they're planning to do a sort of a live action one within the House of Commons, I mean, that would be a true victory for Lib Dem genius, in the sense that I imagine nobody will actually be allowed to see it. It will be you can't film in the House of Commons. You can't broadcast from inside the voting lobbies. Occasionally people take pictures. I mean, as a piece of entirely Lib Dem centric performance art, a grand stunt where they all dress up that no one's allowed to see. I personally am all for it. I'll sketch the hell out of that. It will be the grand high apotheosis of this current Lib Dem lot.
They should just put out a press release saying they've done it. No one will check. The Lib Dems do have some history here, though. This was former Lib Dem leader Joe Swinson in 2019.
We've tabled an EDM tonight. We've written to Jeremy Corbyn as leader of the opposition, who's got the opportunity to call for a vote of no confidence.
Yes, so Joe Swinson, leader of the Lib Dems, calling for a vote of no confidence. Jeremy Corbyn and Labour didn't back her at that point. But later, she went on to agree to give Boris Johnson an early election when he wanted one. And it was a disaster for her party. Even she lost her seat. So maybe they should be careful what they wish for.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack with all that. I mean, I remember part of the reason it fell early on is because Jeremy Corbyn said he would only do it if they agreed to make him interim prime minister were it successful. Presumably because she needed to be sure that there was a proper Brexiteer to get it done, and not having it left to the Lib Dems. And then, yeah, and then of course it was eventually granted. And there was those famous scenes of a Nicola Sturgeon celebrating like a last-minute FA Cup winner. I mean, whatever. When Joseph Swinson lost her seat, whatever happened to her, I can't recall. But the best bit, as I remember rightly, was a sort of a strange consequence of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act meant that the opposition could keep a government in place, knowing that it didn't have any power to actually do anything because it was in the minority. I mean, like, I think Theresa May was sort of kept in place for a little while. And left to kind of stew, because they almost, you're in this weird scenario of, like, it's not even turkeys voting for Christmas, because, you know, both sides are turkeys. It's an extremely complicated, glorious mess, which you should ask Polly McKenzie about. She has talked about it in great length in her role in the creation of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, and has now been got rid of. But that particular bit where they could have got rid of them, but would rather them be kept in power and do nothing, because in the event of fully a no confidence motion, the people who call it are going to lose even badly than they had done the last time around. It's one of the great farces of those years.
And actually, you have to go back quite a long way for a motion of no confidence in the government bringing down the government. Yeah, but here is one example. Jim Callaghan in 1979... after his majority had been whittled away, the SNP and the Libs had withdrawn their support. In March 1979, Margaret Thatcher's leader of the opposition proposed a motion of no confidence in the Callaghan government.
The ayes to the right, 311. The noes to the left, 310, so the ayes have it.
Excellent, excellent historical. I think it's only audio available, but from the Commons in the 1970s.
Well, there is only audio.
Ed Vase has come wandering in.
The speaker is I cannot remember his name, but I know exactly who he was because I've seen James Graham's play This House all about it and how the majority was whittled away and then the two chief whips the Tory chief whip did actually pair with the Labour chief whip, even though pairing was suspended.
It's not George. It's not Bernard Wetherill, is it? It's the one before that.
Oh God, you guys are so young. You're little babies. I was listening to it.
George Thomas,
Lord Tony Pandy.
Yeah,
great man.
Right, up next, we ask, did Liz Truss really screw your mortgage? And does it make any difference if it's true or not, if enough voters believe it?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello? Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The Big Thing.
And it might not be such a bad idea if I never went home again.
Whether it's mortgage rates, interest rates, energy prices, food prices. The disastrous effects of the mini-budget under Liz Truss made a bad situation a lot worse.
That caused the spike in interest rates and mortgage rates last year and put pensions in peril.
Well, they've crashed the economy and people's energy bills, their mortgages, their rents.
They're paying more in their mortgages because the government crashed the economy.
Well, their mortgages are going through the roof.
That, of course, led to an increase in mortgages and the economy effectively being pushed off a cliff.
It might not be such a bad idea if I never went home again.
That was a host of Labour front benches laying the blame for higher mortgage costs squarely on the Conservative government and Liz Truss. Well, in a speech just this morning, the Shadow Chancellor of Wakefield is at it again, trying to counter Rishi Sunak's claim that things are starting to turn around for mortgage owners.
The Conservatives are gaslighting the British public. They say we've turned a corner. But try telling that to the 6.4 million households across England and Wales last year who saw their rent increase or who had to remortgage. Or the 950,000 families whose mortgage deal is due to expire between now and January next year.
But is it really true that Liz Truss screwed your mortgage? That's the question we want to try and get to the bottom of today. She was quite clear on Sky News recently that she's not to blame.
I think it's wrong to suggest that I'm responsible for British people paying higher mortgages. That is something that has happened in every country in the free world. And as I said in the leadership election back in 2022, the reality was that interest rates have been too low for too long. And I think that's part of the cause of the economic problems that Britain is currently experiencing.
So that was Liz Truss on Sky. So let's bring in the Times' property editor, Carol Lewis. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
We'll talk to you about mortgages. And YouGov's Patrick English, who's been looking at the impact of Liz Truss, possibly on what happened in the local elections. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, how are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, very good, very good. Let's start with you first, Carol. What has happened to mortgages, interest rates, in the last, what, 18 months, 2 years?
So when Liz Truss stood up, the average fixed rate was 4.75. So that's the average fixed mortgage rate.
Because mortgages are fixed higher than...
Yes, so the bank rate at that point was 2.25. Yeah. So it's about 2% higher. So that's the average fixed 2 years or 5 years. Now, I know you're going to discuss this later. They had been gradually rising along with inflation and interest rates. So we'd gone from 2.5% in December 2021, and then we'd gone to 4.75 by the time Quasi stood up.
Yes.
And as everyone has just said, it lit a fire underneath the rates. A week later, the average was 5.5. A month later, it was 6.5. A year later, it was 7. So it really rocketed. It's come down a bit now. We're around 5% now. The problem is it's a very delayed, protracted reaction because we are fixed on 2 and 5 years. So although immediately we see the news and we panic and go, oh my God, the rates are going to go up, they actually go up very staggered. So we've got, as a commentator just said, about a million people coming off this year off their fixed rates. Most of those will be going from sub 2.5 to 5%. So they'll see their mortgage double. So we're still feeling the effects a year on.
So let's bring you in, Patrick. So you were looking at local election results and where the Conservatives were losing vote share compared to places with a lot of people who've got mortgages. So what did you find?
Yes, that's right, Matt. So we did a what we call a keyword exercise with the BBC's coverage of local election results, as we do every single year. And I'm a very privileged and honoured to be part of the team that does that exercise. So this year we collected granular data from over 800 wards, which were contested on Thursday. And we were able to run a whole bunch of analyses to try and understand and help narrate, I guess, and help the coverage of what happened on Thursday. And one of the key things which struck me quite early on in the results flow, and kind of as the night went on and we went into Friday and Saturday, the correlation, got stronger and stronger, was the fact that the Conservatives, the vote share change from 2021 to 2024 for the Conservatives was increasingly negative. So they were performing worse as we move up the scale of the percentage of households within the ward that are owned by a mortgage. So let's put this into perspective, or to put some numbers on it. So where we had the fewest number of households owned with a mortgage, the average vote share decline for the Conservatives was about 8 points. But if we go up to household wards with well over a third of homes owned with a mortgage, which is quite a lot if you think about, you know, all the different ways in which homes can be owned, so solely with a mortgage, over a third, the Conservative vote share was dropping by about 14%. So there was some clear evidence here that the Conservatives were being more heavily punished in areas where we have more mortgage holders. And then conversely for Labour, the trend was absolutely the opposite. In the areas with the fewest number of mortgages, their vote share was actually down by 4 points. But with those with the highest rate of mortgages, it was up by around 7 points. So the Conta Lab swing, the sort of direct change from Conservative to Labour, correlated very strongly with the number of mortgage holders within a ward.
I suppose, Carol, in a way, it's not a surprise, given that for most people, their mortgage is their biggest outgoing. So if that shoots up a lot, doubling you were talking about, then it's not a surprise that that is forefront in their minds rather than what might be happening, I don't know, with petrol prices or food prices, whatever. The thing yes. that's the biggest thing going out of your bank yes. account every
it's
month.
It's about a third, at least, of your salary now going out on your rent or your mortgage. And rents go hand in hand with mortgages. Mm. We've seen the rents go up as well. So it could be that in some areas it's landlords whose mortgage rates have gone up and therefore it's pushed rents up, which would also impact on voters switching.
And I suppose the thing Patrick was touching on there, Carol, is that, as you were just saying, each day, each month, there is a refreshed group of people who yes. are cross about their mortgages going up.
Yes.
Because, yes. they're, you know, things that were baked in economically, politically, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, are only just feeding through now, because if you've been on a 2.75% mortgage.
Exactly, because we have this system of fixing every 2 to 5 years. If you look at the States, they quote 30-year fixed rates.
Wow.
So you're not so susceptible to the volatility if you're like the USA or France or some of the other European countries where you're looking at 15, 20-year, 30-year mortgages. Their mortgage rates have still gone up. I think the current 30-year fixed rate is quoted at 7%. As back in 2021, it was 3%. This is in the States. So, yes, it's gone up, but you've got a lot more certainty. And a lot of what goes on in the property market is about certainty. And their house prices are similar to ours.
Really interesting. That. And Patrick, I suppose that we're going to come in a minute. We're going to speak to a couple of economists and try to get to the bottom of the economics on this. But perception matters. And if the Conservatives have not addressed the idea that your mortgage is going up as a result of Conservative policies and as a result of Liz Truss, because that's what's being ingrained in people's minds, then that is a political problem that they need to try and address.
Absolutely, yes. I'm certainly not an economist, wouldn't claim to be for a second. So, you know, when I'm making these connections, I'm not making the connections because I've crunched the numbers and I've run the models and I can squarely blame Liz Truss for the mortgage rise. But that's not really the point, as you allude to. The point is what the public perceive. And the point is whether or not this is a political issue for the Conservatives. And from those expertise, I can say absolutely that is the case. The public do associate the rising costs of living, the rising costs in their mortgages, their rents, their food bills, their energy bills with the Conservative government. And Liz Truss, I guess, is a kind of a figurehead for that. However, it's not just Liz Truss. This is a brand image problem for the Conservatives. And when we ask the public about what they think about the Conservative Party, even post Liz Truss is no longer sort of prime minister, whatever, they still do not believe the Conservatives are best placed to handle the economy. They still do not trust the Conservative Party to bring down the prices. They still don't trust the Conservatives to look after their household finances. So even now, after Liz Truss premiership, Sunak's been in power now for 18-odd months, the public is still have this negative association with the Conservative Party. There's this sense the Conservatives have simply lost the ability to manage the economy, lost the ability to make finances work for the household and for the country, and so they're being punished. And those at the most acute end of this wedge, I think, people who do have mortgages and who are in the sort of the refinancing sense or have been in the last year or two, are really stinging the Conservative Party quite strongly now. And I think as well, just very briefly, there's a much wider problem for the Conservatives, because Conservatives often want to be seen as the party of, let's say, the aspirational classes, those who want to get on, those who want to get onto the mortgage sort of scene, get into the property ladder, sort of build up from there. Well, those are precisely the types of people who are turning against the Conservatives in huge droves at the minute. And so this has a problem for them. It's a problem for them now. It is a problem for them in the future. And it could be a very big problem for them in terms of looking for future voter coalition building as well.
Well, let's look at the political impact of this, because Craig Rimmer was a Conservative councillor in Basildon in Essex until the local elections last week. In Basildon, the Tories lost 11 seats and Labour took control of the council. Now, a third of people, so as you were saying, Patrick, a third is a lot. A third of people in Basildon have a mortgage. About half of those saw their mortgage go up by over £200 a month last year. So they're right at the forefront of this sort of group we're talking about. And I asked Craig whether during his campaign he sensed there was still it was the result of anger towards the government over the cost of living, and whether or not Liz Truss was still being blamed on the doorstep.
She was a little bit, yes. And I think it was 50-50 in terms of national issues, local issues. I think we had a lot of Conservatives who said they were going to stick with us for the locals, but were unsure on the national issues. And Labour were exploiting the Liz Truss episode by putting it on their leaflets, and it was coming up a bit on the doorstep, and there was definitely quite a bit on cost of living.
And in terms of the mortgage issue, about a third of houses in Basildon are owned with a mortgage, which is higher than lots of parts of the country. Are people still talking about their mortgages going up, and who do they blame for that?
Yeah, so I think they did talk about a bit from a lot of people moving from one fixed rate onto another and feeling the brunt of it. And I think there is an element of blaming the government for that, just generally. I did get a feeling that people thought Rishi and the Chancellor were stabilising the ship, but I feel like they still needed someone to blame for what happened.
Do you think it would have been easier for you and your Conservative colleagues if Rishi Sunak had gone further, if you like, in drawing a line between what happened with Liz Truss. He did it a little bit a week or so ago at PMQs, but he hasn't really said definitively, all that was wrong, I'm here to clear it up, and this is a new government. Do you think, maybe he's missed the opportunity now, but do you think he should have made it clearer?
I think there is something to be said for that, and also there was a lot of goodwill for him when he was Chancellor during COVID. So I think he could have done that, and that would have helped to an extent. But also Boris is much loved in Basildon, so there's still an element of feeling that somehow Boris was betrayed and that people had voted for the Conservative Party and Boris in 2019.
It's a complicated mix that you were that you were dealing with. Do people then, when the Prime Minister now talks about we're turning a corner, the plan is working, inflation's coming down, you know, the economy is, hopefully he thinks, out of recession this week, looking ahead to possibly interest rates coming down. Is that resonating in a place like Basildon where mortgage costs rose by, an estimated £213 a month between 2022 and 2023? So, right, seeing some of the biggest mortgage rising costs in the whole of England and Wales. Do people hear that message now from the government and think, oh yeah, I can feel that, I believe that, stick with them? Or is the damage done, do you think?
I think there's quite a bit of damage done. Unfortunately, these things have a long tail in terms of recovery before people actually feel better off in their own personal finances. I get the feeling that, unfortunately, you know, there's quite a lot of work still to be done before a trust is restored.
Do you think, just finally, do you think that is possible while in government, or is the only way to repair the Conservatives' reputation to basically lose the election, clear out, rebrand, refresh, time of reflection, whatever that might be?
It does feel like mission impossible in government, but I fear a Starmer government, fear any sort of coalition with the SNP. I think this country's been through a lot. We've had so many black swans attack us. I think that for me, you know, and I think a lot of Conservative voters still have this antithesis towards Labour. And if we can keep them out, however impossible it may be to, you know, recover that trust, we need to try and do that.
As Craig Rimmer, a Conservative councillor in Basildon, who lost his seat last week in precisely the sort of thing you were talking about, Patrick. So would you, is Craig right, Patrick English, from YouGov? Is Craig Rimmer right when he says it could well be mission impossible?
I think it's certainly a lot easier to do from opposition. And what opposition does grant you is, if you don't control the news or the agenda setting ability that a government does, you do have that ability to sit there and criticise everything and to make a point of saying, well, whatever's going wrong, we would do the opposite. You get to build a sense of an alternative that is better, an alternative that offers people solutions to the issues that they have with the incumbents, that they have with the situation that is going on at the minute. As a government, you simply do not have that opportunity. We saw Rishi Sunak kind of try that in a very bizarre way after conference, saying, I am the change, don't worry about what just happened. Then quickly brought in David Cameron and did a bunch of other things, which kind of just spoke to a continuation, really. And now, as we can see, the plan, the messaging is, yeah, let's stick to the plan. Definitely what I'm doing is good. Don't change anything. So I think it's very difficult to make that sort of argument, make that sort of take that sort of trajectory from government. And opposition allows you to do that much easier. But of course, you ask any Conservative MP or any Conservative minister, they're not going to tell you they want to spend time in opposition. They want to win an election. So they kind of had to go, I guess, figure out a way to try and rebuild trust, try and rebuild a sense that they are in control of the economy again, that they can be trusted to look after people's finances. But it's going to be such a tough sell, given the extent of the brand damage to the Conservative Party. And I think one issue or one statistic which highlights that how bad that brand damage is the fact that when Rishi Sunak came in as Prime Minister, the sort of the council there was quite right. There was a lot of goodwill for him. He had pretty decent personal ratings, at least equatable with Starmer at the time. Over the course of his prime ministership, his ratings have declined and declined and declined to become as bad as his party's. So rather than him dragging the Conservative Party up and people getting a sense that the Conservative Party under his stewardship and his government were getting better and improving, what happened was the opposite. People's opinions of him were tainted by the fact that, you know, they still just did not trust the Conservative Party, do not like the Conservative Party, and do no longer wish to see them in government at this moment in time.
Thanks for that, Patrick. Patrick English from YouGov. Before I let you go, Carol, obviously Rishi Sunak was sort of pinning his hopes on interest rates coming down. If they're getting blamed for them going up, maybe he gets some, even though it's not up to him, it's up to the Bank of England. Is there any prospect of that? There's a decision happening, the Bank of England decision this week. We sort of thought we might be on the second or third.
I haven't got a crystal ball, but I don't think it's going to happen till the end of the year, if I'm honest. I think if I've got a quick moment, the other thing to throw into the mix is affordability. Conservatives said they were going to build 300,000 homes a year to help with affordability. They haven't. They appear to have ditched their targets. We've had the whole NIMBY targets argument in their government. While Labour are coming out strong with, we're going to build 1.5 million homes in the next 5 years, we're going to give you affordability for those people trying to get on the ladder. So they're making the right noises. Whether they manage to do it where the Conservatives failed.
That really is the million-dollar question. Can you build more houses? That's a whole other conversation. That was Carol Lewis, property editor for The Times, and Patrick English from YouGov. Right, let's turn our attention now to the economics of this. We've talked a lot about the politics. Julian Jessop is an economics fellow at the Institute of Economic Affairs, and a supporter of Liz Truss. Hi, Julian.
Hi, good morning.
We've also got Joe Mitchell, Professor of Economics at the University of the West of England. Hello, Joe.
Good morning.
Let's start with you then, Julian. Did Liz Truss really screw your mortgage?
Short answer, no. I think it's frankly ridiculous still to be blaming Liz Truss for the current high level of mortgage rates in the UK, or indeed anywhere else in the world. Mortgage rates have also more than doubled over the last 2 years in the US, as one of your other contributors was saying earlier. But in the Eurozone as well, interest rates have more than doubled. What's basically happening is that global central banks are responding to higher inflation and returning interest rates towards more normal levels. Ironically, Liz Truss actually warned about this during her campaign for the Tory leadership, saying that interest rates have been too low for too long. She now seems to be still being used as a scapegoat for the fact they've had to return to levels that are more appropriate for the state of the economy.
Joe, I suppose we'll start with you with the same question. Do you think she's to blame for what happened to mortgages?
I broadly agree with Julian's analysis there. There was a spike following the disastrous budget, which I thought was grossly irresponsible. But that spike in interest rates and interest rates on government debt, for example, was relatively short-lived and has mostly dissipated. There may be a smallish persistent effect. But as Julian says, the great majority of the rise in interest rates, policy rates, government debt interest rates, and therefore mortgage rates is to do with the inflation that we've seen and central bank responses. That inflation is to do with supply constraints coming out of the pandemic and the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So I do think these claims that Liz Truss crashed the economy are silly, really. They've clearly worked as a political strategy, as your previous segment sort of showed. It's really hit home. But we've had a fairly narrow technical recession. The economy is probably just about out of that recession now. To say that the economy was crashed was false. But I would say that I think voters are right to blame the Conservatives for their current economic woes, because wages have been flat pretty much since 2010. Houses have not been built. So I think there probably is an economic blame here. Brexit, of course, has made people poorer. So while they've pinned the blame on the Conservatives, they've actually pinned it on the wrong cause, because that's an easy one to sort of, you know, it was emblematic of a very clear failure at the time.
What about then this phrase that was floating around at the time, the moron risk premium, the sort of the extra bit on your mortgages that could be ascribed to Liz Truss? Was that real at all, Julian? Does it still exist now? If people are coming off their fixed rate mortgages now, is there any element of that which is still there as a result of what happened with Liz Truss?
No, I don't believe there is. You could have made a case, of course, in the week or two after the mini budget, that the sort of additional volatility in UK mortgage rates relative to those in the rest of the world was down to the fallout from the budget. There are other factors, though, going on at the same time. In particular, the Bank of England was starting to reverse the policy of quantitative easing, the so-called sort of money printing, and that was unsettling the bond markets. There was the turmoil in the pension market, largely due to the fact that they've been taking these enormous big derivative positions on interest rates that blew up when interest rates started to rise. So there are other factors going on at the same time, but there's no doubt that the fallout from the mini budget contributed to the uncertainty. But as Joe said, that was a sort of, you know, 1 or 2 week window. Since then, things have pretty much returned back to normal in the mortgage market. Mortgages are being priced as they usually are off where the market expects official interest rates to go over, say, the next 2 to 5 years. So the mortgage market is behaving perfectly normally. The reason why mortgage rates are high is nothing really to do with any sort of government policy failure. It's simply because interest rates have had to be raised to choke down inflation in the UK, just as they have in the US and in the Eurozone and many other countries around the world.
Is the fact that she's not to blame, actually more to the fact she wasn't there for very long? Had she remained, and like you were saying, she talked about mortgages being too low. Patrick Minford, another one of her economic gurus, said at the time, interest rates have to go up. It is a good thing. A normal level is more like 5 to 7%. And I don't think it'd be any bad thing if we got back to that level. So it is the truth, actually, our mortgages would probably be higher if Liz Truss hadn't been turfed out after 6 weeks, Julian.
Well, I think that's very hard to say. It's difficult because there are some things that the government had done or would have done under Liz Truss that might have resulted in slightly higher interest rates because the economy would have been stronger. So, you know, if you cut taxes and, you know, boost the economy, then you may well end up with slightly higher interest rates than you would otherwise have done. But in those circumstances, I don't think people would have been too bothered. The bigger picture, I think, though, is that I think interest rates will be roughly at the current level, regardless of whether Liz Truss had been Prime Minister 2 years ago and regardless of whether it was Labour or Conservatives who are running the country now. You know, the big picture all around the world is that interest rates have had to rise. Looking forward, though, I think I'd be a bit more optimistic than some others seem to be about the prospect of interest rate cuts over the course of the year. We probably won't get a cut this week, but we will get a new set of forecasts in the Bank of England that I think will be consistent with inflation falling below 2% over the remainder of the year. And maybe 2 or 3 or even 4 interest rate cuts before a likely election in November. So I'm not saying that's going to be enough to turn fortunes round for the Conservatives. It's clearly going to be pretty hard for them to gain credit for that. But at least some of that sort of headwind to their poll ratings will disappear as mortgage rates come down and inflation becomes less of a concern than it is now.
Thanks, actually. Just finally, Joe, it does feel like this is more about politics and economics then, and a failure to see, much like Labour were blamed for crashing the banks and spending too much money leading to the crisis, you know, endlessly picked over by economists, but that became the prevailing economic, political argument in sort of 2010, 2011. This is actually a failure of politics, not economics. This has all been pinned on Liz Truss.
Yes, I mean, you highlight the going all the way back to 2010, the Conservatives very successfully pinned this story on Labour of there being no money left and therefore we couldn't invest, we couldn't build new housing, we couldn't fix the roofs of the schools and the hospitals. And that was false. It was a false narrative which was successfully pinned. And I think, as I said, we're still living with the fallout from that. And that ultimately, that sequence of decisions and followed by Brexit is a very big part of why people are feeling the pinch in their pockets. So there is a sort of irony now that Labour have done the same trick. You know, they've pinned a somewhat false story, but made it stick as a political strategy. I think the real danger here is that when Labour come in, they've so fully accepted the sort of there's no money left story, and as we've seen, they've rolled back their investment plans, they've rolled back a whole sequence of initiatives as a result of that. I think there's a danger that they then continue that sort of austerity policy as a result of having adopted that previous false narrative.
And I suppose there's also a risk for them if they've landed the idea that your mortgages are a direct consequence of the government of the day, given that we've accepted we are probably, you know, in this world now after a long period of unusually low interest rates, they may well find that comes back to bite them as well. Really fascinating conversation. Really appreciate your time today. Joe Mitchell, Professor of Economics at the University of the West of England. Before that, Julian Jessop, Economics Fellow at the Institute of Economic Affairs. And that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Drop me an email if you want to, matt@times.radio. But for now, from me, Matt Cholley, it's goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget?
Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.